Well, hey, we have Alex on the line here, Anthony. What would you like to ask him?
Everybody says you got to be in the broker's pockets. How can you possibly start receiving those pocket listings or try to be in that circle of influence of the brokers?
I think just the persistence is always key. One of the things like I was talking about is really having those ducks in a row. I've got my lender, I've got my property manager, I've got my proof of funds. That is the way to get into the back pocket of a broker.
Welcome to the Diary of an Apartment Investor podcast with your host, Brian Briscoe. In this podcast, we bring some of the top professionals in the apartment investing field to discuss various aspects of the apartment investing journey with the sole purpose of educating listeners to make wise investment decisions. The Diary of an Apartment Investor podcast is sponsored by Four Oaks Capital, bringing you high yield returns through apartment complex investing.
This is journal entry number 23. In this episode, I talk with Alex Olson and Anthony Franklin. Keep listening to learn how to develop relationships with brokers and gain access to those pocket listings. Welcome to the Diary of an Apartment Investor podcast. I'm your host, Brian Briscoe with Four Oaks Capital. I'm very excited for today's show. This is one of our Ask the Expert episodes. We have two amazing people on the line with us right now, a man with a ton of experience as an apartment investor and broker, Alex Olson, and a very motivated and energetic aspiring investor, Anthony Franklin. So first, Alex is a Kansas City real estate broker. He's gone from 0 to 11 units as sole owner in 18 months using various creative financing techniques and using $2 million of other people's money. His new focus is to help out-of-state real estate investors secure apartment complexes in Kansas City by vetting and locating on and off-market deals that meet their requirements. So that said, Alex, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Well, that's great. So really impressive, you know, and you know, I'm a syndicator, you know, so, you know, just looking at the unit count, I think a lot of times I would rather have 11 units as sole owner than, you know, a whole bunch of units as a syndicator. But
sure.
Yeah, I mean, going from that, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background, your history, and why you decided to actively pursue apartment investing?
Yeah. So, I mean, growing up my whole life, I grew up on a farm in central Nebraska. And growing up on a farm in the 90s and 80s, you don't have a whole lot of money. Or at least you feel like you don't have a whole lot of money. And so my dad, being a sole proprietor of his farming operation, I always had this desire to be sole proprietor of my operation, whatever that was going to be. Of course, everybody has all these ideas and different things.
Yeah.
And so as time went on, of course, went to college, got a college degree, worked a 8-to-5 job. But I always had these little things brewing in the background that I spent probably way too much time on.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, you know, fast forward 10, 12 years, we bought a lake house. Mm-hmm. We then tore down the lake house and then we built our dream home on that property. And so I always thought I liked real estate. I wanted to be an architect when I was a kid, all these mm-hmm. different real estate related things. And I fell in love with real estate at that point, even though it was building our house. You know, I just knew that that's really what I wanted to get into. I saw the long-term wealth building aspect of owning investment property real estate. I saw the creative side of it, whether it's in creative financing or in the structure of the actual apartment or mm-hmm. multifamily property that I was looking at. And so that's when I fell in love with real estate, was when I built our house.
Mm-hmm.
And so after that point, I wanted to get into, well, how the heck do I finance real estate? I don't have any money, really. I've got all my money tied up in my house. I've got, you know, no experience in raising capital, private money, all these different aspects that most or many people do in real estate.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was looking at real estate as how to get this thing done. So that's how I started off in real estate.
Okay. Yeah, nice. So you got your dream house on the lake, which I think that's like most people's end state right there. You know, have that perfect dream house on the lake. So now let's talk about a little bit about your why. You wanted to be sole proprietor. You wanted to be basically in control is what it sounds like. Mm-hmm. What are your other motivations for investing in real estate?
So a big motivation for me was, of course, long-term wealth,
mm-hmm.
right? And you can diversify. Everybody talks about diversifying into different investments, whether it's your 401k or stocks or other businesses, whatever it might be. And so I looked at real estate going, man, on a 30-year mortgage or 25-year mortgage, this thing's going to be paid off. You know, I bought it for, let's just say, $1 million or $500,000. Mm-hmm. And that thing's paid off. You know, some people's or many people's 401k accounts aren't worth that much money.
Yeah.
And so I looked at it as a wealth building tool, not only for me, but for hopefully generations to come. Mm-hmm. I think that's another very attractive piece of real estate is you can own it forever and you can pass it on. And there's all those tax breaks and every different aspects of it that I think is very important when looking at how you're going to retire.
Yeah. And I think the diversification is key. You hate to say it, but most financial planners, when they talk to you about diversification, they're still talking about market, you know, everything that's in the stock market, you know. So I think true diversification, you have to have something outside of the stock market as well. Because if you're all invested in the stock market, you're not really diversified. So I like real estate for a lot of the same reasons. It's something, it's an appreciating asset. And I mean, you can get a bank to loan you 75% of the purchase price, pay it off over 30 years, and you got yourself $1 million asset. So I like that. So let's talk about some of the deals you've done. Mm-hmm. Pick your favorite one or give us an overview of the type of things that you've done.
Yeah. So I'll just give you an overview of what my investment strategy has always been, even when I was mm-hmm. buying my personal residence. Yes, your personal residence is a different type of investment. Some people say, well, it's not an investment because of X, Y, and Z. But eventually it's an investment because you have value in that property. And so that's why I bought the lake house. So everything has to do with the location. It's a very cliche way of saying, you know, talking about real estate as location, location, location. But my location requirements are very, very strict. Mm-hmm. And that is, it must be within 2 blocks of a major economic driver within, you know, in my area, it's Kansas City. Mm-hmm. So whether that's a large expanding hospital, whether that was a university that was established and been there for 100 years, mm-hmm. or a streetcar expansion, all these different economic drivers where jobs are going to be there. You know, it's not going anywhere. It's also very walkable. Mm-hmm. 2 blocks away from university, college kids are going to walk to it. No matter how lazy you or I were when we were in college, we still could walk 2 blocks. Same thing for the hospital. So every single piece of property that I bought from an investment standpoint follows that rule. And not only is it easy to rent, it's a lot easier to rent than something that's 6 blocks away. Yep. It's also going to appreciate faster. Mm-hmm. So you have forced appreciation within that model. So you can use the forced appreciation side to cash out, refinance faster, or get a line of credit, whatever your need is at the time. And then, you know, I think it's just cool. For me, I wanted something cool, and that's why I wanted the control over it, is so I knew exactly where I was going to invest. And also, at the end of the day, most all of those, some might argue that the college university might not be recession-proof, but I would argue 2 blocks away is still recession-proof. Mm-hmm. It's not like the university is just going to disappear.
Yep.
We might be going through a bumpy patch right now over the next year or two. But anyway, so that was the strategy, was long-term, recession-proof, forced appreciation locations.
Yeah, you know, and something that I've noticed here, I live in the DC area, and I'm about 1.5 miles from a metro station. I mean, you talked about your streetcars, but it's interesting that the price of real estate around those metro stations, you know, when you're inside that 2-3 block radius, the price of real estate just jumps, it skyrockets. So you get mm-hmm. 3-4 blocks away, and the price goes back down. And I'll tell you what, you know, I drive and I park at the metro station. Well, pre-COVID I did. Now, a little different. But pre-COVID, I used to drive, park at the metro station. I remember, you know, leaving the metro station every day, coming home. And like I said, it's 1.5-2 mile drive. But see all the people just walk into those apartments just right next door every day would be like, man, it'd be nice to live there. But actually, the thought I have right now is I wish I could buy that apartment. But
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, DC prices are a little high on apartment buildings. But so tell us what's next for you.
Yeah, so I took all of what I learned, and I'm still learning, as we all are, in developing my portfolio as sole proprietor, and said, okay, how can I scale this and help others do this same thing, but on a much larger scale. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that comes into the creative financing aspect. But so now I'm a real estate broker in the Kansas City market. I only work on apartments and large and bigger apartments, I should say.
Yep.
Everybody has a different definition of large, but you know, and I help syndicators like yourself and others find, locate, vet. I'm a market expert here in Kansas City. And so that's really where my focus is helping others grow their portfolio, knowing the Kansas City market. So that's where I'm at now. And that's where I'm going to continue to go.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you something that I appreciate brokers who focus on single markets. I mean, I'm not saying I don't work with brokers that don't, but we operate mostly in, you know, upstate South Carolina. And it's a lot more credible for a broker in Greenville, South Carolina, who's selling a Greenville apartment than it is for somebody out of Charlotte or Raleigh selling something in the Greenville area, you know.
Sure.
Just the broker's going to know a lot more about what's exactly going on in that area, the local street by street dynamics. But, you know, so mm-hmm. I really appreciate the fact, you know, you are a Kansas City expert. I think anybody looking for Kansas City would be smart to pick up the phone and give you a call.
Appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, I'm always here to help.
Yeah. Now let's introduce our next guest, Anthony Franklin from St. Paul, Minnesota. Anthony's a video game designer and the host of the Millennial Shift podcast, which is another multifamily podcast, and an aspiring multifamily investor. That said, Anthony, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. So tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and basically your history up until you decided to pursue apartment buildings.
Okay. Well, being a host of the podcast, being on this side as a guest is very interesting. I'd rather ask a question and listen versus tell the answer. So
yeah,
it's a little different for me, a little out of my comfort zone. But for me, it started when about 5 years ago, I was having my daughter and I was also working in a warehouse environment where I just didn't like it. Me and my boss didn't get along and I needed to change my environment. And I was thinking like, how can I change or control my environment? So started reading books, looking up books, and I came across the book by MJ DeMarco, The Fascinating Millionaire. And it popped in my mind, like, millionaires create their environment. So for me to do the same thing, I should copy them. Mm-hmm. So I read the book and learned about businesses and real estate. So I'm like, oh, this makes sense. This is what I need. So I went down that rabbit hole, started learning about real estate from Joe Fairless, other great people that's in the real estate field, also about businesses, like how can I create businesses that help other people? Mm-hmm. So that's what led me to starting the video game business, because almost everybody plays video games or they know somebody that plays video games. And every time you walk outside your house or apartment, you're going into another building, which is real estate. So it makes sense for me to be into those two fields.
Yeah. Well, good, good, good. So how long have you been doing the video games?
So it's been about 5 years on and off. Like the first few projects, I've been just learning how to like code and program and stuff like that, just mm-hmm. to get my feet wet, sort of to say. But recently in the past year, I decided to focus on new upcoming project, which is going to be, in my eyes, which is voice.
Okay.
Because a lot of people are making games for the phones, which is kind of overcrowded. I like to go where it's the beginning stages of something. Mm-hmm. So this is, in my eyes, the beginning stages of entertainment, especially with the COVID going on. A lot of people at home need different ways of entertainment. So that's why I decided to start making a project for Amazon's Alexa voice.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I think the same thing holds true in real estate. You know, you want to go to where people are going to go in the next couple of years. You'd be on the front side of the wave, and you know that's really going to make money in both different fields. So let's look at, I mean, you talked a little bit about it already, but let's focus on your why and your motivation for apartment buildings. So what is the motivation?
For me, the main motivation for multifamily investing in general is the time freedom it can provide when you invest in real estate, especially commercial real estate, because the scale, like single family homes can provide financial freedom. But to me, the scale that commercial, specifically multifamily, can provide for somebody is phenomenal. Like to buy one property and install that covers your whole monthly expenses off of one property, if you find the right property, it just blows my mind.
Yeah. You know, I know a lot of people who have bought a fourplex and been able to live for free in a fourplex. So you live in one unit and rent out the other three. Just one of those things. I started house hacking. I basically got into a house with a owner-occupant loan, lived there for a couple months in some cases, and went on to the next one. You know, so I built my portfolio kind of the same, that direction, just one here, one there. And I'm active duty military, so I move every 2 to 3 years anyway, which definitely helped. Well, good enough. Well, hey, we have Alex on the line here, Anthony. What would you like to ask him?
Alex, thanks for you for being on the show. So since you're being a broker, what is some of the ways that you weed out potential investors from like the type kickers that are just kind of going to waste their time? How do you weed those people out from, okay, this guy's serious and he's shown genuine interest into buying an apartment?
That's a great question. I'm really glad you're asking, actually, because there are hundreds of people a week, it seems like, that we all call them tire kickers, right? What are they actually interested in? So to answer your question, there are 4 or 5 things that really helps a broker understand that you're serious. One is, do you have a lender that you're working with? Are you, you don't have to necessarily be pre-approved, but are you in that process? And if not, a broker like myself can usually help you find one. So asking those questions up front. Two is, do you have a property management company that you think you're going to use? If not, a broker can usually help you find that. And that's another question you need to have. You need to have at least those two things in the pipeline before you can really offer. I mean, you can offer on a property, but for people to take you seriously. And then the third thing is having some kind of investor bio. And by that, I mean, it doesn't have to say, like, obviously you got to be very truthful of what you've got going on, but you want to showcase that, hey, these are, in your situation, these are the things I'm doing. I'm a podcast host of a multifamily investment show. All these different pieces of your bio in a document that you can also send on to the broker. That's always, I've had 3 or 4 deals recently where that's kind of their first thing that they've sent to me is those 3 things. Hey, look, here's who I'm using as a bank. Here's who I'm using as a property management company. Here's my investor bio. And I look at those and go, okay, this guy or girl is ready to go. And so those are the keys to starting a great broker relationship.
Awesome.
I'll say something from the investor perspective. There's 2 particular brokers that I love telling the story. You know, one of them, I went down, like I said, we operate in South Carolina. I went down to South Carolina and I cold called 20 or 30 brokers. And not very many of them wanted to give me any time. One of them gave me 15 minutes. I met him at his office. We met in a conference room. And it was 15 minutes on the dot. As soon as that 15 minutes was up, he was done. But he promised he would send me some other stuff. Yeah, I got some properties you might like. I'll send it to you. But guess what? Nothing. So I sent a couple emails to him, you know, follow-up emails in the next couple of weeks and no response. Fast forward about 4 months, we had a property under contract. We raised $2 million to purchase it. And we were just shy of closing. And so I sent him an email and it said, hey, this is where we're at. And exactly what I just said was in the email. We just got this property under contract. Here's where it is. We raised $2 million. We're going to close next week. We're looking for our next one. Do you have anything for us? And all of a sudden, he started answering my emails. So it's just one of those things, you know, the more prepared you are, you're absolutely right. The brokers are looking at you and they're vetting you. They're looking, and he looked at me as a tire kicker at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, once he realized I was serious, and oh, by the way, our second syndication was through that particular broker. So, and one more, if I may, but another broker on the same trip who denied me, he talked to me on the phone and he literally told me, I get hundreds of calls like this a month. If I spent 15 minutes with everybody who called me, I wouldn't have time to do what I need to do to make money. And he completely wrote me off. Well, he didn't write me off, but he was very kind in explaining that to me. And I actually appreciated that he did. I'd rather him explain that to me and say no, then say yes, and then just never send me something. But the property we're under contract with right now is through him. So,
yeah, I mean, that's how it is. You gotta get in there and show that you're serious. And there's multiple ways to do it. I mean, I just kind of laid out the quick way, quick and dirty way. But to piggyback off of what you're talking about, Brian, is, you know, if you go into a situation, you say, hey, look, I'm under contract, or I want to be under contract in the next 30 days. These are the 4 properties that I'm looking at doing. Here's my numbers on how I'm evaluating these properties. This is my offer price. That gets the broker's attention as well. And so I think coming in with numbers and a price and all the other things I listed really can get a broker's attention from a buyer's representation standpoint, even on the listing side. I mean, listing brokers, you know, they want to see that you've done some kind of business in the past, or at least know what you want to do and that you're ready to rock and roll. Listing brokers are going to require, hopefully, a pre-approval letter of some sort, because they're not going to take that to their seller and say, hey, look, this person is ready to go on it. And the first thing the seller is going to ask is, okay, cool, are they approved for finance? So that's a great point, Brian, is there's multiple ways to get people's attention. And I think just having the numbers and the confidence as well is key.
Yeah.
Awesome. Great points. I love it. Another question. What is a way, aspiring investor like myself and others, what is ways that we can provide value to potential brokers, since some of them may not have deals or may have not done commercial deals in their portfolio? How can they exchange value or provide value to the brokers?
Yeah, I think the key to that is, once a deal is done or under contract or whatever, is, you know, everybody makes money off of their own personal brand. So if you have a good experience with a broker, talk about how great that broker was. Also really kind of stick with that broker the best you can. If they're good, if they're not a good broker, then I'd move on. But try to do your transactions through specific brokers over and over again, because you will build trust, gain knowledge, more and more knowledge of the market. And you also have a broker that's not going to just try and sell you something, because they trust you to know that you're going to buy something else. And so even if you don't do a deal with them, you can use the same concept. Hey, Alex was great to speak to. And this is all on social media or whatever. Alex was great to speak to. We had a good time chatting. He really knows the market. And I'm looking forward to buying my first deal, my next deal, whatever it is with him. That gives a broker confidence that, hey, this person is also adding value to me, and it's reciprocal.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point.
Awesome.
So what else you got, Anthony?
Everybody says you got to try getting a pocket list and like be in the broker's pockets. Mm-hmm. I know after you do your first deal, like the law of first deal, I've seen pop up numerous times, that seems to help out better. But how can you possibly start receiving those pocket listings as well, or try to be in that circle of influence of the brokers?
That's hard. It really is, because you've got time commitments. And how do you, as a broker, how are you going to spend your time? And I think one of the things, like I was talking about, is really having those ducks in a row. Okay, I've got my lender, I've got my property manager, I've got my proof of funds, or whatever the case may be. Hey, I'm ready to go on this. If you see this, and then you kind of hit them up. I've got a guy who calls me every 3 weeks, probably, asks me if I have anything new. And sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. And he's like, no worries, I'll call you again in 3 weeks. And maybe after 3 or 4 months, I'm probably going to say, okay, cool, just send me a text message, I don't have time, or stop answering my phone. But I think just the persistence is always key into it. Don't take up anybody's time. Just, hey, what do you got? Do you have anything? I'm still pre-approved. I still have a bank. I still have my property management. I'm ready to go. So that is the way to get, I think, into the back pocket of a broker.
You know, something I've noticed, brokers are building their lists, you know, just like we as investors are building our lists of investors, we're building our lists of brokers. You know, they're building their buyer and seller list. So I've noticed that the newer brokers are much more likely to talk to new investors. The well-established brokers, they already have hundreds, if not thousands, of people on their list. And when they get a new listing, it may be an off-market listing, in air quotes, but they're blasting that out to thousands of people. So it may as well be an on-market deal. So I think for a new investor, if you can find a new broker, that new broker is much more likely to give you his time, because he is building, or she is building, their own list of potential buyers and sellers. And since they're new to the game, they're going to be hustling more, and they're going to be much more interested in talking to the new investor who's also a hustler.
Yeah, you make a great point. You know, when I first started out doing it, and even now, you know, if it's a smaller deal, I'm not going to define what smaller is, because it's always ever changing. But if it's a smaller deal, if it's a newer broker in my office that likes a smaller deal, or maybe they understand the smaller deals better, I'm more apt to pass that off, do a warm intro to them. And I would say that there's been a lot of deals that's been made doing that. with, you know, smaller deals, new investors, those kind of things. Even on the other side too, where somebody has a more experienced broker than me will pass somebody else off to me because their pipeline's too full. And I've been able to help those people out. So that's a really great point, Brian, is getting in front of people that are newer or hungrier or whatever the case may be on the, you know, active on the real estate side, you can get their attention easier.
Yeah, I was talking to one of the other aspiring investors that came on my show post-show, and she's looking at working for a brokerage and just talking about it. And she was just saying, hey, I'm basically cold calling people, you know, cold calling owners. You know, I don't know anybody yet. How do I do this? Cold calling owners, cold calling potential buyers, just saying, hey, this is what I want. So the new people, they're hungry and they're trying to establish themselves just like a new investor. So it usually works out very well.
Awesome. I love these tips. These are awesome.
Yeah.
Final question I have, what is some red flags that you see or to you is, okay, this is a red flag, I'm not contacting this potential investor. What are some things you say, okay, he's on my do not call or do not contact list?
Red flags for me are, I'm only going to buy at this price, low ball offers, you know, I can close quick. All these, the kind of the key words that maybe used to make sense back in when people weren't buying multifamily nearly as much as they are. But right now, the offers that are out, I mean, if you don't have a serious offer, I probably know you're not super serious about it. And so having realistic expectations, I know the market really well, but you have to kind of know the market a little bit. So that way we have expectations that are similar. Otherwise, I know that the deal is never going to work out. So why waste my time?
Yeah. Really, really good points on that one. Well, hey, good enough. Hey, Anthony, anything else you need to ask? Or you said that was final question. We good already?
I'm good. That's
wow.
Awesome tips that you're providing me. I'm sure other listeners will enjoy that as well.
I'll tell you what, I would have very much appreciated having a conversation with the broker a year and a half, 2 years ago, and just asking the same questions. It would have saved me from a whole lot of pitfalls. I learned a lot of the things that were passed on this through the school of hard knocks, picking up the phone and cold calling, figure out what worked and what didn't. And you know, I'll tell you what, it was almost like playing 20 questions every time I called a new broker, but I was on the receiving end of the 20 questions. And every time I was asked a question I didn't know, I wrote that down. I'm like, all right, I got to figure this out before the next broker call. So they asked me about financing. I'm like, haven't thought about that yet. So next call, okay, was to a you know, lender or a broker. You know, okay, how do I get financing? Okay, great. And so for me, it was a very progressive, iterative way of getting there that took 6 to 8 months. But Alex, I really appreciate the wisdom and the perspective you brought to the table here. Like I said, I think it's going to be extremely valuable for a lot of people. And Anthony, appreciate your time. Appreciate everything you do. And you got a great podcast. I'm going to continue listening to that. And
no problem.
Yeah. Last question for both of you. Alex, you first. How can people get a hold of you?
Best way to get a hold of me is to hit me up on LinkedIn, really. Mm-hmm. I'm all over LinkedIn. I mean, you search my name, Alex Olson, and I'm in Kansas City. Should be able to find me, my face, pretty quickly. And then you can also email me anytime, alex@clemensrealestate.com. Mm-hmm. And happy to chat about any of the topics here or anything related to real estate. I'll talk about anything on real estate about any time.
Okay. And we'll put a link to your LinkedIn profile and your email address in the show notes. So anybody who's looking for that can just tap their phone or scroll down. Anthony, same question for you. How can people get a hold of you?
Awesome. Well, first of all, I want to say thank you, Brian, and thank you, Alex. I greatly appreciate this moment. The best way to get a hold of me is, like Alex says, LinkedIn. All my sources connect to LinkedIn. So just look up Anthony Franklin. You should be able to find me.
All right. Awesome. And once again, I'll put a link to your profile. I'm connected with both of you, so it'll be easier for me to find you than other people. So, hey, guys, once again, thanks for coming on the show. And that's a wrap.
Thank you for listening to the Diary of an Apartment Investor podcast today, brought to you by Four Oaks Capital. If you'd like to know more about how to invest in apartment buildings or want to be a guest in our show, visit our website at fouroakscapital.com/podcast or email us directly. If you're still listening, you obviously like the show, so pull out your phone, tap subscribe, and leave us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast app. And we'll see you again next week.